Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm Sandy Fowler, here with my co-host Judy Davis, and we so love doing the Mighty Parenting podcast and sharing these great guests with you. And you can help us out. You can help keep these shows commercial-free by visiting mightyparenting.com. And when you get there, you'll see a place where you can donate and support the show, and that helps keep us commercial-free. So today, we are talking about kind of coping with the ups and downs of parenthood, and in particular, that sleep aspect of it, missing out on sleep and what happens to us when we're not sleeping well. I know, you know, before we have kids, we're dreaming about parenthood and family life, and we know that when we have a baby, we're going to be a little sleep deprived, but nobody dreams about having teens and 20-somethings and still being sleep deprived. But it's a big problem for parents because it affects us in many, many ways. I know for me, when my kids were babies, yeah, we had a little bit of that. And then when my youngest was around 3, we hit a stretch where she would literally not let me sleep. And I'm not going to go into the whole story of it, but she was terrified of the witch living under her bed. And it just wreaked havoc. And then we were okay for a long time. And then again, her becoming a teenager and wanting to be out late when I am a morning person, it was making me, not just me miserable, it was making my family miserable because I was tired, cranky, and hard to live with. Judy, you know how hard I am to live with when I'm tired and cranky.
Yes. Yes, I do. You know, and it's funny that you say that because when we talk about parenting, we are always saying that it's the hardest job we ever love. But I'm not even sure that hard describes parenting correctly sometimes. And one aspect is that sleep. And another one is the anxiety that comes with parenting in general, and then it gets impacted with how we take care of ourselves and how we do that. And parenting is kind of like, I liken it to job hunting, where you're putting yourself out there and then you have your strengths and your weaknesses that are for the whole world to pick through. And however we end up feeling about ourselves, and like you said, Sandy, if you're not feeling good physically, being the best parent you can be a real challenge. So it's one of those things that I'm excited to talk with our guest today. Her name is Frances Robbins, and she is the founder of Precision Mental Performance. And Frances specializes in something that I think we all need to do a little more of, and that's helping new and veteran moms cope with the ups and downs of motherhood, and ultimately helping them feel good physically so they can do the job that they need to do mentally. And she specializes in treating anxious and depressed moms to overcome their fears, regain their lives, and have a healthy, happy family again. So welcome to the show, Frances.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here, Sandy and Judy. Thank you so much for having me. And I really connected to your intro. Whew, that, when you don't get good sleep, it's rough. And we tolerate it maybe the first night or a couple of nights, but consecutively having horrible sleep. If you, every one of us can remember when we had a new baby and how fragmented our sleep was, and to think that that will continue on after they're grown, it can be very frustrating, and it's so debilitating, so debilitating. It's really a fundamental thing that until that's fixed, the other just seems like it's just purposeless, you know?
Yeah. And the thing is that, okay, when they're a baby, you go, it's the kid that's not letting me sleep. But it might not directly be your teen or your young adult that is the cause of you not sleeping. That's correct. It can be, you know, Judy mentioned the anxiety, and that can tie in. I know my husband struggles with anxiety issues, and his it's been really apparent to me this year just how closely the sleep and the anxiety are tied together and how they become this vicious circle.
They do. It's like a it's like a dog chasing his tail. You know, they never, the anxiety causes the insomnia, but then you're laying in bed thinking about all the things that you should be doing and why you're not sleeping, which makes anxiety. It's just this horrid circle, that kind of a vortex of a tornado. You just get stuck, stuck.
Well, Frances, I want to take a step back, because I know, you know, sleep and anxiety are something that you are really passionate and talk quite a bit about. So I want to dig in and find out why. How did this topic become such a passion thing for you?
Well, when I, so I was active duty military, and I was, I spent 10 years in the military, and I worked primarily with military service members, but also their family members. And I'm an adult psychiatric nurse practitioner, so I specialize in working with adults, so 18 and older. And they would start a conversation with me. Sometimes they would talk about, like, they're having difficulty sleeping, but they might say that they're feeling anxious or depressed or something really significant, like a huge concern for them mentally. And as we just started talking more and more about it, it became evident that sleep was the culprit. And in the military setting, some of our guys and gals, our service members, they are working shift hours that they are kind of expected to just show up and perform, even though they only had a short period of time for sleep, and they work kind of chaotic hours at times. And even though we can say, well, that person is working and the family can rest, well, the family is up with them. The family, the wife is, or the spouse is there supporting that person, getting them out the door, or their lives are so chaotic. So they would come to me and they would have all these issues. And then as I would ask them, tell me about your sleep. How are you sleeping? And usually they step back like, well, that's not why I came here. I came here because I'm anxious. Well, tell me about your sleep. And again, as they start talking to me, if once we get the sleep under control, their sleep improves, then that anxiety they have, it's gone. The depression, it's not really there anymore. The other things, the factors, you know, they were having a horrible time getting along with people at work, or maybe their relationships were in a bad place. But once the sleep was established and their sleep was improved, just the ripple effect of that was really obvious. Now, granted, there is people who have clinical depression, clinical anxiety, and sleep is a piece of that. But for a majority of us, honestly, the majority of us, if we just get our sleep straight, the rest of it kind of falls into place.
So my question is, why is that? I mean, what is going on with sleep that it affects us so strongly and in so many areas of our life?
Well, it's a necessary component of life. You know, I can't remember all the details, but many years ago, there was a experiment to just try to let people, keep people awake and kind of see what they do. And there's a complete breakdown of their mental capabilities and their physical capabilities. And it's very torturous. And when you're sleeping, we know that that's a time that your body is repairing itself. That's a time, if you are a kid and you're going through growth spurts, that's the time you grow, is when you're sleeping. And you're, even though your body is busy, your body is resting and it's preparing and it's repairing, preparing and repairing itself for the next day. But it's a natural flow of life, just like eating is a natural thing that we do. And without it, there's consequences. And there's been lots of studies on sleep particularly it's people do the best around 8 hours of sleep, consecutive hours of sleep through the night. Some people require 10 hours. Some people can work off of less than that, maybe like 7 hours of sleep. But typically it's about an 8 hour time frame that they need. And so when they fragment that and they have like 2 hours and then maybe 30 minutes and then they have 4 hours, they're not really going through a healthy sleep cycles that their body needs to do that repair and prepare for the next day.
Is it the same for our kids? I mean, we know that teens often don't get enough sleep. They become night owls and then have to get up for school really early in the morning. Mm-hmm. So how does sleep impact their mindset and the way that they handle the world?
Right. So that's a great question because that's a real problem. You know, my kids are now grown and they're adult people and they're not going through growth spurts anymore. But when a teenager is going through that growth spurt, they require more sleep. They usually eat yourself out of house and home. Like they eat everything in the refrigerator. And seasoned moms know, and grandmas and aunties know, okay, we're getting ready for a growth spurt because all the milk is gone and who ate everything, right?
Right.
So their body is like collecting all these calories and then they sleep like bears. They sleep forever. Now, part of it is there is a normal progression in their body that's growing, right? That takes effort and time and they are tired. But then there's also there's certain habits that they could be doing that could be affecting their sleep that is not part of the growth. It can be... We now know that the blue light that's emulated from the electronic products, whether it's their cell phone or a computer screen or a electronic pad, that light mimics daylight in our mind, in our brain, and we kind of trick our body into thinking it's daytime, and it makes it very difficult to fall asleep. High caffeine products, so if they're drinking a lot of sodas or drinks that have a lot of caffeine in or eating foods that have a lot of caffeine like chocolate in it, that can also keep them awake. So there's some part of it is a responsibility of just a teenager doing teenager things where a parent really has to help them with that process to really see the impact of what they're doing. And then on top of that, there's the natural, the busyness of the body trying to sleep, trying to build itself and grow. So sometimes as parents, you know, I can remember I would get so frustrated because my kids would be awake in the middle of the night. And I'm like, you have to get up in the morning. And I naturally would go to that place where it's because they're, you know, they're watching their videos, they're engaged in things they shouldn't be. Like I didn't really go to the place all the time where I would think, oh, well, maybe there's something physical going on. You know, it's easy to go to that. It's easier to go to the explanation that it's all them. There's a combination, honestly. There's a combination. The things that a parent can do is part of being a teenager and part of being a young adult is they're looking for the rationale or the reason behind something, right? If mm-hmm. if they're past the time in their age where they'll just believe you,
right?
They're not going to believe you just because you said something. So really they're developing into adults, and part of an adult learning is understanding the rationale or the reason behind this is happening. And once you can explain the rationale of why these things are happening, that will help them to begin paving the idea that maybe indeed that's happening. Part of it is almost a socially, it's acceptable for teenagers just to be so tired in the morning. But there's also things that we're doing that can be damaging and causing that. So it's really a collection of two things that are happening. Things that they're doing to themselves and then also just their body, their physical self. So if your kid is one of those kids who notoriously, it's just a battle in the morning to get up in the morning, the first thing I would really recommend is it a problem to your kid? Is it a problem? And is it something that they're willing to start looking at like, oh man, this is a problem. If you're talking to an 18-year-old or 19-year-old and they're having that last growth spurt, because there is one that happens in that age, you know, the kids, they graduate from high school and then college starts up and they're like so tall, you know, there's that last giant growth spurt that happens. If they don't really see it as a problem, then you're not going to really get much buy-in from them to actually do anything. So that's the first place you kind of have to go to is, do they see it as a problem?
And so, Frances, so really, this is kind of a checkpoint for parents, because it makes me crazy. Like you said, you know, my kids will be tired and I start looking at, well, you're doing this or you're doing that, or why don't you take your electronics out of your room, and, you know, making these other suggestions. Mm-hmm. But you're right. If they don't actually consider it to be not just a problem, because they'll say, yes, I'm tired and I don't like to be tired, but it's still not something they're willing to work on, then it's just, we're banging our head against a brick wall.
You are.
Our relationship with them.
You are.
You are.
It's not personally, then it becomes a check with the mom or the parent to say, is this a battle I'm willing to fight? In the grand scheme of things, is this really a big deal? And sometimes it's not. Exactly.
It goes back to that consequence of actions. It's like when our kids are little, we tell them, put a coat on, it's cold. And if they don't, or if they take it off when they get outside and they get cold, there's a natural consequence. I think in some ways, what you're saying is that it's the same for this. We can, as our kids get older, we can point out the correlation between how they're feeling and their sleep patterns or what they're doing before they fall asleep, give them suggestions, and then allow them just to have the consequences of those actions, where if they sleep through their alarm and are late for their job and may end up getting fired or whatever, it's not on.
Right.
That's the natural consequence to help them.
So that is really key in other fields too. I would tell you that the natural consequences to their actions is a milestone that they have to learn as their, I'm going to get geeky on you guys, as their frontal lobe of their brain starts developing. It is so cool to watch the frontal lobe develop. So the frontal lobe is this part right where your forehead is. And it's your executive reasoning. It's your, connecting the dots. If I do this and this, this will happen. And I want you both just to think about, and your listeners, just to think about something we did when we were maybe 16. And we think,
oh gosh, oh my God,
I can't believe I didn't get arrested or killed, right? And you do crazy things because you never thought, like, anything bad would really happen. And now you think about that as an adult brain with your frontal cortex fully developed, and you're connecting lots of dots, and you realize, oh my gosh, it's like a miracle that I didn't get in trouble or arrested or killed or whatever, right?
Right.
You guys can all think of something, right? I'm sure we all can.
Yeah.
So magically, what really happens is, as your brain grows, that frontal cortex grows, you start realizing consequences to your actions. And that happens in boys. It happens a little later in life, usually in their early 20s, typically 23, 24. It's really by 25, they got it figured out. In girls, it's a lot earlier. In girls, it can be 19, 20, sometimes 21. So that is a piece of it too. Honestly, the kids that are younger, they don't have the brain development yet to connect the dots. They just really don't. So it helps them to see consequences early on and problem solve what's happened. Because through the problem solving is how they learn resilience. They learn that it's okay to fail. It's okay to to recover and to keep going. And they learn what that feels like, so that when the kids that don't experience that, because the parents are just like super concerned, and I see this a lot with my anxious moms that I work with. They're so worried about their about the outcome of whatever that they like super prepare plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D to make this whatever happen. And their kid never experiences disappointment or failure. And so they go off in their life and they do something, and then they have something that isn't really that tragic, but to the kid, it's life tragic. You know, maybe they missed their train, or maybe they were late for something, or they just completely forgot an appointment, and they're just devastated, totally devastated. When those other adults by that time who've experienced those things and they've learned to kind of problem solve and figure it out, they're healthier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I want to make sure that I'm putting these dots, I'm connecting the dots here. As you're okay. talking. And so, all right, our kids' frontal cortex is really developing as they're graduating from high school and moving on to that next phase
Correct.
Of life. But
Correct.
That doesn't mean that during high school, we take over for them.
No, no, it doesn't.
Try to force them to not have screens in their room. I mean, not that we can't have some family house rules, but we don't try to say, oh, their frontal cortex isn't developed, so I need to take care of this until they hit 19.
Right.
Let them experience it, and they struggle through piecing that together over those years. Okay.
That is perfect. And what I like to do, I mean, when I talk to my clients, and especially when I was in the military setting, and I would have some that were right at 18 and or maybe 22, and I'd have them for a while, and we talk about lots of things. And when you're in the military and you're stationed at a base, you're there maybe 4 years. But anyway, I would have people for quite some time, and I would tell them about the frontal cortex development. And then over time, they would do something, and they would come to me and they would say, you know, Major Robbins, I just realized that this and this and this happened when I do this. And I'll say to them, oh, your frontal cortex is developing. And they're like, oh, okay, whatever.
Okay, so I really love this information about our teens. Bottom line is, if they don't want our help, we got to accept that we can't make them take it, be willing to help them. Oh, wow. I'm actually doing half the wrap up right now. But here's the other piece of it. And Judy, I don't know if you had something else about teens, because I wanted to go to parents now, because honestly, if we are sleep deprived, it's going to, as we said, make that 10 times, 100 times harder to be the parent that can let that go.
Right. Right. So I would tell you, there's a lot of, good information, just a basic Google search about what we call sleep hygiene, which is all the things that you need to do to like have a healthy habits that you would start really when you wake up in the morning that would prepare you for that night's sleep. So there's that piece of it. But there is times where you as an adult could have an underlying medical condition. Something could be going on that you really need to get that checked out with your medical doctor or someone like myself who's a nurse practitioner who can look and see if there's something medically that's going on. You know, earlier you had talked about your husband having some anxiety. Well, there's if when someone comes to me and they're exhibiting symptoms of anxiety, just because I'm a medical person, unlike a licensed professional counselor or like a life coach or someone like that, but I come from the medical side of the community, and I do therapy. I'm going to make sure that I do a thyroid. I'm going to check the thyroid hormone and make sure that that's functioning correctly, because something as simple as your thyroid being out of whack can cause anxiety. So there's things I'm going to do, and I'm going to talk a lot about nutrition and things to make sure there's nothing you're doing to kind of sabotage your sleep. But if you have an underlying medical condition that hasn't been identified, all the sleep hygiene and all the whatever in the world is not going to help that. Until that gets fixed, your sleep's not going to.
What are the indicators that you need to go and get it medically checked out if you're asleep or you're more anxious or things like that? Are there certain things that we need to look for as parents, either in ourselves or our kids?
Yes. So I will tell you because of my clinical background, I'm an adult psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner. So my training and my research and everything starts at age 18. Mm-hmm. So from 18 on, if you're experiencing difficulty with sleep and anxiety to the point where it is impacting your job, it's impacting your home life, it's something that you're not able to just work through, then that is one of the biggest flags. If you're having difficulty with sleep and you've done all the things that you can easily find on the internet to do, as we have already talked about, the screen, you know, getting rid of the electronics in the evening, limiting the caffeine throughout the day, not drinking alcohol at bedtime, thinking that it makes you sleepy, because the sugar and the alcohol will metabolize about 4 hours later and you'll be wide awake on a little sugar high. But there's things that you could be doing that's sabotaging your sleep. Once you've done those things and you're still having difficulties, then that's where I would be looking at getting some medical advice. So you go to the doc or the nurse practitioner. They do an easy blood draw to see if you have a thyroid disorder. I will tell you that probably less than 10% of the people I work with have a thyroid disorder, but every once in a while someone does, and that, you know, it's just good medical practice to check that. Well, once that person has been cleared, like they don't have a thyroid disorder, then we start talking about therapy. And actually there's a whole therapeutic regimen called cognitive behavior therapy for insomnia that I go through and I help people with. Now, that is a process that they actually start doing some behavioral changes for themselves to help them with their sleep. And what I found for my own practice is I would have, as I was discovering these people were having such difficulty with sleep, I was saying the same things to people all the time. So I ended up writing a little book about it to help them so that it could help like everybody, not just my clients, to help them with basic cognitive behavior therapy that they could go through on their own. But that is back to your original question. It's all about, is it impacting your work? Is it impacting your home life?
And what might that look like? You know, as I sit here and say, okay, it's impacting my work, but I need the concrete there.
Okay. All right. So I would say you don't sleep well. So you're missing work. You're not showing up for work anymore. You've stopped working. You're calling in, you've used all your sick leave. You are when you get to work, you can't stay at work very long. You're now, because maybe you work by the hour and now it is impacting your bottom dollar. Like you're not able to afford things, or it's impossible for you to go get a job. It's that sort of thing. That's what I mean by impact, like a really big deal.
Okay.
A really big deal. Now, if you are a dependent mom, like, because I work with the military families and the service member is the one who's kind of getting the paycheck, then when your sleep is so terrible, you are angry, mean, nasty, hateful, forgetful. Just you're not able to do the things that you know that you need to be able to do. Your kids want to go off and do something and you're like, no, I'm not going anywhere. Or you feel like when you're driving, you're having difficulty just kind of going through the motions of getting from place to place. That's what I mean by impacting, where it's just stopping you in your tracks, where you're not able to do what you feel like you should be doing.
Thanks for that. That really is helpful. That's really helpful.
So this is really great info. I want to take a minute and just kind of go back to the beginning and kind of summarize and hit our high points. And, you know, we talked about sleep and anxiety because it's hard to be a good parent when you're not feeling good. And these are big problems for our teens mm-hmm. today. And as you said, you know, sleep and anxiety are like a dog chasing its tail. One causes the other, which increases the other and increases the other. So getting a handle on one can help with the other. Mm-hmm. And there are, you know, basically sleep is necessary for life. It's just, it's not optional.
Correct.
Without it, our mental and our physical capabilities break down without it. Mm-hmm. And typically people do best on 8 hours of sleep, but we do need to experiment a little. Some of us might be good on 7, not able mm-hmm. to get by on, but good on 7. And some of us may need 10. Mm-hmm. And teens in general, teens do need more sleep. And also we should be aware and let them know that when they're hitting a growth spurt, that they're going to need even more sleep. Mm-hmm. So they can kind of be prepared for that. Especially if we have a teen who is short on sleep, is having sleep issues. And we've talked about this now a few times where we've said, if they don't see it as a problem and a problem that they're willing to work on, we need to accept that we can't make them fix it. But if they're interested in fixing it, we mm-hmm. can share with them that, you know, use blue light filters on your devices in the late mm-hmm. afternoon and evening. Just put all the devices away for an hour or two before you're going to sleep.
Yep.
Try to avoid high caffeine products, period. But if you're mm-hmm. going to have them, don't be chugging those down in the afternoon and certainly not in the evening. And don't buy into the societal norm that being tired is a good thing and a normal and a badge of honor, because it is none of those things.
Right.
And that's correct. We can Google sleep hygiene to look for other tips and ideas as well. But sometimes there's an underlying medical condition. So if we've tried sleep hygiene and we've improved that and it doesn't make a difference, we should make sure that we go see a medical doctor. Or if we, you know, maybe we haven't hit all of those yet, but we just feel in our gut, or we just feel like, you know, we want to rule that out. Go in, see your nurse practitioner, see your family doctor, just to check and make sure that there isn't an underlying problem there. And Judy, I love that you asked, you know, like in detail, what does it look like when this is interfering in our life? Because when, you know, lack of sleep is interfering in our life, or anxiety is interfering in our life, we definitely need to do something and get help if we haven't been able to fix it easily by ourselves. And so
that goes with our kids, and that goes hand in hand when we see those things in our kids.
And so that would look like missing work, harming our relationships, being angry or mean or nasty, doing things like having trouble driving. So those are indications that there's a problem that would need to be seen to, and likely with a professional. So this was very interesting. And for anyone who wants to hear more from you or says, oh my gosh, I would love to work with you to fix this, how can they find you?
Oh, that's very kind. So I have a website that it's easy to schedule time with me through that. I have an online therapy practice, actually, so it works out very well. And it's Precision Mental Performance. And it's so it's just regular precisionmentalperformance.com. And then if they wanted to email me, it would be Frances, and I spell that with an E, so Frances, at precisionmentalperformance.com.
Thank you so much for joining us today and for being part of our community, Frances.
I'm so excited. Thank you.
And if it's your first time listening, welcome. Be sure to go to mightyparenting.com because we have all kinds of things for you that will help you in your parenting journey. And if you are a longtime listener, remember that you are a mighty parent. And this is Sandy Fowler and Judy Davis. See you next week.